Hi, this is Hugh Greenwood from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean Basich.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Vass. You can find me on X at Hashtag Kangas, Instagram Hashtag Kangaroos Podcast, TikTok Hashtag Kangaroos 1. So tonight I am joined in a Get to Know You episode with Siobhan Rowe. So yeah, it was interesting journey. I didn't realise at the time, but she did grow up following Carlton. So she converted and went to the bright side to North Melbourne. So it was a really good episode. I really enjoyed it. We obviously talked about the AFLW and the grand final loss last weekend. And I wanted to get her thoughts on the Charlie Comyn interview that happened last week or during a week. I can't remember my days at the moment, about him moving to the back line. So I wanted to get her thoughts on that. So there was a lot to go through. It was a long episode, so strap yourselves in. If you're at the gym, pump out those bicep curls and so forth. Let's bring on Siobhan to chat about it. So tonight, I welcome back to the show in another Get to Know You episode in the lovely Siobhan Rowe. Now, Siobhan, welcome to the show once again. And before we start and ask you about your journey on becoming a North supporter, we unfortunately had the AFLW grand final last weekend and a heartbreaking loss when we were so close. Now, you're an AFLW supporter of the team as well, mm-hmm. not just the men's program. Heartbreaking, wasn't it, that last quarter in particular when we knew it was over probably within the last couple of minutes?
It was. I mean, I'm super proud. Firstly, thank you for having me on, Dean. Always a pleasure. It was really tough to swallow, especially when the game clearly was probably beyond grasp. And I guess watching Dakota Davidson take those marks in the last quarter and slotting those goals was really heartbreaking. I think we all have to be really proud of the season we've put together and to make it to a grand final. And hopefully the men can take a lot of inspiration from the girls and just the way that they conducted themselves throughout the season. And we had our doubters and our knockers, and I was one of them, and then came out in that final against Melbourne and was so dominant. And then to get that 1-point victory over the Crows, I think they've provided us with so much joy and hope over the course of the year. But of course, like, really disappointing to end the season that way, and kind of leaves a bit of a fire in the belly for us. It looked really good at the end of that third quarter, didn't it? I mean, Kate Shearlaw's mark was just simply outstanding. And then Alice O'Loughlin getting that goal briefly after, I felt like the game had turned. But in saying that, losing Jenna Bruton so early on in the match was a huge loss. And I just thought from that moment onwards, maybe tonight isn't, or today wasn't the day for us to get that piece of silverware. And the first quarter, we were dominant, and I really felt like we should have been further in front. And then Charlie Mullins got that freakish goal where the ball bounced and went through. And I just thought, oh, they just seem to be making the most of the chances they get. And it was a little bit like every time we went inside 50 without Jenna Bruton there as the precision kicker inside 50, we were bombing it too much to Shearlaw and Randall and the talls down there. And then by the time the last quarter rolled around, it just felt like we'd run out of gas. Brisbane obviously have played in many grand finals, had the experience there, and played in a losing one last year. And it was almost like they rallied and just thought, we ain't losing this one again. And it slowly kind of slipped away from us, which was quite heartbreaking because in the crowd, it was just so electric. I haven't felt a North Melbourne crowd like that in so long. And obviously we've been so starved of success for such a period of time that to see our supporters yelling and screaming and high-fiving each other was just magnificent. And to not come away with the chocolates is obviously quite disappointing. But in saying that too, I think the list is primed to go again. And you know what they say, there's a 50% chance of a team keep winning the grand final, and hopefully next year we're in it again and we're on the other side of that result. So with the likes of Ashra Dell, who signed on for another 4 years today, which is just such a boost for the club, and same thing with Garner and those stars, along with the younger crew in Eddie and O'Loughlin, who was fantastic, and the next wave coming through, I think we'll be thereabouts again, and hopefully we can bring it home.
No, pretty well summed up there too. And it's fair to say, look, you mentioned Jenna Bruton earlier. Yeah, it's fair to say I think we would have won if she stayed healthy. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, it did feel like when she went down, we missed something. And even the smother that she put on before the intercept, it just felt like she was the one that got us over the line against Adelaide. There's no doubt about that. So for her to not be there when we probably needed her the most in the grand final, her third quarter against the Crows was game-breaking, and I felt like we missed that game-breaking sort of player. So not saying necessarily we would have won the game, but I think we would have been more of a chance and maybe had a few more petrol tickets in the last.
Yeah, I'm saying we would have won if she stayed healthy. But that's fair enough, and it would have given us a lot more of an opportunity. And you probably agree with this. I think we spoke off air that if we got just one more goal towards the end of the third quarter, it might have been enough to hang on.
Yeah, absolutely. We were just peppering and peppering, and then of course the Shearlaw moment, which if we would have won that grand final, would have gone down in absolute folklore. That was so uplifting, and then O'Loughlin with the holding the ball. And there was a moment as well where I think we had that opportunity to go 13 points up, and in a grand final, and especially in a low scoring match too, to have the difference between a 7-point game at three quarter time and a 13-point game would have been so different. And there was that moment where Garner almost got coat hanged, and it probably should have been a free kick, and knowing Jazz Garner, it would have been a goal. And that moment, I think, was really crucial in the game too. And it just felt like when the last quarter rolled around, we just spent all of our petrol tickets, and it was just too far of a mountain to climb once they got the first. And the weather probably didn't help either, Dean. I mean, it was really hot on the day, and maybe Brisbane are probably a bit used to training in those conditions, being up in the sun most of the time. But, I think we might have been having a different conversation if it was a 13-point three-quarter time lead.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was about 26 degrees, which isn't too hot, but the previous few days in Melbourne was absolutely shocking weather. So it was like 18 and raining pretty much all of Saturday. So, yeah, it's probably just a bit of an adjustment. And like you said, I think Brisbane are used to the heat a lot more than us. I guess on the good news and the positive is the Bruton injury isn't probably as bad as we thought, and it's probably only a 6-month injury. So she should be right for the start of round one next season, and probably round one of pre-season as well. So that's probably awesome. The good news. Yeah, because she is an important part of that team, and definitely a big part of our premiership push for next season. We've obviously got the AFLW best and fairest tonight. And now, unless the umpires are doing the votes for that as well, then you'd have to think Jasmine Garner is probably going to win that.
Absolutely. I think it's probably a two-horse race between Riddell and Garner, just because of how dominant both of their seasons have been. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Jazz Ferguson up there, who again was snubbed by the All-Australian selectors, but some players that maybe are a bit unheralded in the mainstream sort of AFLW scene, but certainly not by our club, are probably going to be in the top five as well. But you think it's Jazz Garner's award to lose, and what a champion she's been for the club since she came across from Collingwood. I mean, this will be her third AFLW best and fairest if she wins it tonight, and what an achievement for her.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably interesting outside of the top two where the place finishes goes. Like, you got Mia King was outstanding this season, yeah. Talia Randall, Erica O'Shea, Emma Carney. The top five or six are probably, are going to be right up there. So, and you've probably got others like Elise O'Loughlin that really stepped up. Val Eddie was really good. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting vote count. We only use 24 players this season. So, yeah, it's I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because probably a lot of fringe players will have to move on, like the Charlie Granville's. I mean, you can't always wait for a player to get injured to get your opportunity either. So sometimes you're just going to have to move clubs. So that's probably that makes it probably a bit tough. So we've already seen Gavalis looks like she's probably on the way out and looking for another club. And there's a few clubs interested, and she probably needs to find more opportunity somewhere else. We'll move on to the men's program just briefly. Now, they've obviously started pre-season. Now, there was an interview on TV with Charlie Condon, and he pretty much said that he's taken Ben Mackay's spot for next season. Are you excited or happy with that one, or a bit dubious on that?
I don't know, Dean. I mean, I think we all saw it coming, didn't we? I think as soon as Ben McKay went off to the Bombers, all of us were under no illusions that even though we did get Toby Pink through the door and drafted a couple of defenders that may take some time to fill out, that was the area of the ground that was the most pressing in terms of need. And we all immediately looked to Charlie Comben. It's interesting because I just think him and Larky were just starting to form a really nice combination before he broke his leg. So I'm hoping, A, that he's able to get out on the park. But at the same time, he was so close to starting to clunk those marks. But as a defender, we haven't seen it before, but he looks a good type. I mean, he's got the size and the physicality for it. And we know how – I think his best attribute is probably his hunger for the contest. So as a defender, I think that's a really good trait to have. So I'm excited to see how it unfolds. If he's able to pull a full season together, fingers crossed, as a defender – I mean, we saw it with Robbie Tarrant, didn't we, that he just had that real long run of bad luck with injuries and then turned into one of the best defenders in the comp for a few seasons there. So I think it's a smart move. I would like to be able to clone him so we can have one of him up forward and one of him down back. That would be nice, wouldn't it? But I've got no doubt that the experiment's probably one that has to happen. And you never know, he could become the ultimate swingman as well if he really flourishes down back. So, I think it's a conversation maybe to be reserved after we see it, after a few rounds. But no doubt it's a good move knowing how desperate we are down that back end of the field.
Yeah, I mean, you can try these things. And, yeah, lucky, and I think, he might be able to get continuity in his body playing the back line. It seems to generally happen. I'm not too sure why. But even Darcy Moore was injury prone as a forward. Then all of a sudden he goes to the back line. Barely had an injury since. He's had the odd hamstring. But, it seems to fall like that for some reason. Maybe less impact on their body. I'm not too sure. It's going to be interesting. I've seen Toby Pink. It might have been not last week, the weekend before. He doesn't look that tall, Siobhan. He's probably only, I think he's measured at 193, but he looked about 190, 191 centimetres. So I'm not too sure if he can be that other key defender, to be honest with you. It might be left to Charlie Comben and Aiden Corr. Are you excited about that, Aiden Corr, next season?
Yeah, to be honest, I think I've been a big Aiden Corr knocker, but at the same time, I thought his second half of last year was outstanding under tough circumstances, obviously with Griffin Lowe going down. I just think he's not a third tall defender, I mean. So for him to flourish the way he did, I actually am really excited to see what he can produce as maybe the main man down in the back half. And with Comben by his side, I'm hoping the two of them can at least stem some of the bleeding. And then, of course, we've got Dawson squared in both Callan and Will. Will, I think, is probably someone that will probably take some more time to develop just because of how young and lean he is. But I do think there's some hope there. And if Aiden Corr can continue the form he had, then I think it's going to be a back line that will be serviceable enough to hopefully stop a bleeding down the other end of the ground.
Well, we're certainly hoping. Is it going to be your boy, Callan Coleman-Jones, is that second tall forward next season, or do you think we go a bit smaller and try and play a bit faster?
No, I've got all my eggs in the CCJ basket. I've had a lot of faith in him for a long time, Dean, and so far I don't think the fruits of that plan have come to the fore yet. But I think with the decision to play Comben down back, we can't just have Nick Larky doing it all on his own again. It was just too hard for him. And I think we heard him speaking to the press the other day, thanking our recruiting team for drafting a few forwards. So I think it'll be starting off as the combination of Coleman Jones, Larky as the forwards, with Coleman Jones pinch hitting in the ruck. But in saying that, that ruck position is such a precarious position with Goldstein gone. I think not a lot of us are sold on Sherry yet. And whether they maybe trial the combination of Sherry and CCJ, or I think by the second half of the year, we're going to have one sole ruckman. And I have a feeling it might be Coleman Jones. This is a year for experimentation as well, I guess, because there's a lot of unknowns. And if they play off, I think Clarko's going to look like the genius that he has been in the past.
Yeah, we're certainly hopeful of that. But, it's going to be interesting that, number one ruck position. Obviously, we've got the draftee as well. I don't think, look, I'm going to be blunt. I don't really rate Hamish Free. And I don't think, I don't think he's any danger of taking anyone's spot. So, yeah, it's probably, I mean, to start with, it would be Sherry and Cohen Collins-Jones. Whether they try both of them and rotating, I'm not too sure. Just try one of them and maybe Larky is that second pinch hit in Ruckman. I'm not too sure. So, yeah, a lot to play out, I guess, over the preseason. And when, preseason, I guess the intra-club matches start next – or the intra-club and practice matches start next season. Well, this is an episode about you, Siobhan, and I'm sure all your followers want to get to know you as well. So let's go to the start. And how did you follow North?
Okay, so I have an interesting backstory. So I actually grew up a Carlton supporter. So my dad was and continues to be a mad blue bagger. So I was fresh out of the womb and I was reciting the Carlton jumper numbers and number one, Stephen Zwani. So there was I grew up a big blue bagger up until the age of about 12 or 13. Mum always grew up a North fan. And for whatever reason, and I still don't really know to this day why, but I decided to start following North. I think I know now that I'm a bit older why there was such a pull towards North. Carlton obviously being a club that's a really big club in Melbourne with a big supporter base. And I like to say, much to my dad's sadness, that the Blues are probably more of a silver spoon in the mouth type club, where I always loved that North were a club that had a smaller supporter base, really fought for everything that they had, and a club that they're small but mighty. That's the way I like to think of North, that they're blue collar, they get to work, and that's probably why I fell in love with the club. And I think around that age too, I started to realise how much I enjoyed watching sport and talking about sport and analysing sport. And so I can probably thank North for maybe my love for sports media and sports journalism as well, because I just became obsessed with the game and I loved going to North games. And to my dad's credit, as much as he was devastated with me jumping ship from the Blues, he was the one that came to the North games with me and cheered just as loud. So that was my sort of journey to becoming a North fan. And since then, for about 10 years, I've just been a huge North fan and ridden all the highs and the lows of the last sort of period of time where we had those prelim final wins and was so close to making it into the grand final on so many occasions. And then obviously the new era sprung and we've had some dark times of late, but my love for the club and its people and the shinbone spirit and just the blue collar working class nature of North has always kind of drawn a lot of love out of me.
No, fair enough. I mean, people should know that you're 23 years old, so it's been about 10 years. Probably the last 10 years you really probably started following them. The first five have been probably pretty good for you, Siobhan, and you probably thought flag was coming soon, but the last five have been a bit tougher by the sounds of it.
Absolutely. But like I said, I think like our supporter base is very unique, and I've been to my fair share of Carlton games and still continue to go with Dad, and we just have such a unique and awesome fan base. And I mean, I know it's a lot smaller than a lot of the other clubs in Victoria, but I do feel like, I mean, I'm speaking to yourself now who just loves the club too, and we all have this real unwavering love and support for the club and what it stands for. And I was always really drawn to that shinbone spirit sort of values as well. And I think we'll get into it a bit later, but certain players always kind of had my heart as well. And although we've had some really difficult times, I do feel like eventually it'll turn. And the fact that we've all been through this as a supporter base and I just think that would make everything even more sweeter. And there are green shoots, if you want to call it, there at the moment. And I do feel like we should have maybe pinched a flag during those 2013, 14, 15, 16 sort of era when we had those seasoned veterans, but wasn't to be. But of course, there's always hope for the future, isn't there?
Well, yeah, that's all we've got at the moment. So we've got hope. So that's sort of a bad thing sometimes. And how long have you been a member for?
So I think I've been a member since about 2014. So we're approaching the 10-year mark, which is really cool. So I've had the same reserved seat for the entire time I've been a club member, and that's a real pleasure. Some of the people I sit with, shout out to them, they're just wonderful human beings, and we've formed like a really awesome bond, and we've almost seen each other grow up a bit, because I'm around a lot of people that have been members for 60 plus years, but then also people that were kids when they were younger, and now they're teenagers, and we've seen that the team grow and change. We've seen each other grow and change, and every week we're there catching up on, you know, our day-to-day lives and the goings about of the footy club. So yeah, being a North member and having that reserved seat has been something that I really cherish, and I've always looked forward to the weekends going to the game and seeing those same people and relishing in the really amazing moments that we've had at games, and then also kind of having that emotional support buddy, which we've certainly needed of late, to sort of cry on their shoulder or express our disappointment and frustration with. So I wouldn't change my reserve seat for the world. It really is, like I said before, that just the people involved in our club are so special, and yeah, the people that I sit with in that level one bay is no exception to that rule.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you prefer, well, not that we play at MCG much, but you prefer watching football at Marvel as opposed to the MCG.
Yeah, I think I'm just so used to it now. Like, obviously, yeah, as a club, we only usually get the one game at the MCG a year, which is just so disappointing, but I guess it is what it is. But I sit kind of on the level one on the wing, and it's a great spot. So I absolutely love it. And you almost feel part of the action at times. And I'm very loud at the footy, so I'm sure people look in hear my voice sometimes. And no, it's always a great atmosphere. And yeah, the spot I'm in, the footy just feels like it's happening so close to you. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. And we might as well get to it. Who have been some of your favourite players?
This is a question I had to have a really long, hard think about, but one that might be a little bit obscure. I think there are the real obvious ones. So I've always loved Boomer Harvey. I think he is a player that is North Melbourne. I know that sounds silly, but games record holder, bleeds blue and white. So watching him every week was just a real pleasure, just the ultimate professional. I started wearing the number 7 for Jack Siebel, basically as soon as I became a North supporter. I think for me, Jack Siebel epitomised North Melbourne, which was just toughness and grit and bleeding for the jumper and putting your body on the line at all costs. I always loved the way Jack Siebel went about his footy, even up until this year when he retired. I always wore the number 7 proudly and knew that my captain was going to go out there and just do what he had to do for the team. So for me, probably the all-time kind of favourite player I've had for North was Jack Siebel, and probably will remain Jack Siebel for a little while. I found his retirement really hard to swallow, and then seeing him go to Richmond and wear that Richmond jumper as a coach was really hard to swallow as well, just because I think he's a North Melbourne man. The obscure one was probably Jared Waite. I saw a bit of Jared Waite when he was playing for the Blues. And then when he came across to us, I was just so excited, because when you went to the footy and watched Jared Waite play, you just didn't know what you were going to get. He was such an enigma as a player. So some weeks you'd be sitting there going, come on, like, we know that there's so much more than you can produce. And other days you go to the footy and he'd win you a game off his own boot. And he would just take a mark and you go, yeah, that's something only he could do. Or there was a game against the Bulldogs that I'll never forget on a Friday night when we were on that 8-game winning streak, and that was, I think, 2016, and he came out and just won the game off his own boot, and there was just no stopping him that night. So there was always something about the way Jared Waite played that really I loved as both a Carlton player and, more importantly, as a North Melbourne player as well. Some of the others, I mean, I always loved Drew Petrie. I'll never forget his 300th game, buying that big badge, thanks, Drewy, and wearing the top that night. He, again, is, to me, a North Melbourne person. Also a great human being as well. But I love the way he went about his footy. And I love seeing Nick Larkey run around in the number 20 because I just feel like Nick Larkey is that younger version of Drewy. So always loved and still love Drew Petrie. And who can forget Frank the Tank? I mean, that's probably one of the most iconic moments in our club's history. So absolutely love Drew. And in the same vein, the same sort of players from that era. So Michael Ferrito again, that sort of player similar along the lines of Jack Siebel. You just knew what you were going to get from him every week, and he might not have been the most talented player out on the field. I mean that probably with the most utmost respect, but always gave his all for the jumper and for the team and would scrap and fight, which again for me is what North Melbourne's all about. Ben Cunnington, you can't go past him for exactly the same reasons as probably the others. And also I had a lot of time and respect for Andrew Swallow. I thought and still think now that he's one of the players that maybe we never really gave enough credit for what he did for our club. I mean, he captained us for so many years. And once again, like I mentioned, just always put his head over the footy and gave everything he had for the team. And inside media is obviously an unforgiving job. I mean, their bodies get bashed around quite a lot, but yeah, always gave his all. And the other player as well was Lindsay Thomas. I always loved watching him play, and similar to Jared Waite, you never knew what you were going to get, but there were moments that you would just never forget from Lindsay Thomas. And I was absolutely devastated when he pulled on a Port Adelaide Guernsey, but I just blocked that out of my mind. He was another one that was kind of part of that era that I really feel like those guys just deserved a premiership because of how much he gave and all of them gave to our great club. So yeah, that's some of them. Sorry if I waffled a bit, but I could talk about this stuff all day. I mean, there are certain players that catch your eye that really do make you fall in love with the club even more.
Yeah, I mean, there seemed to be a theme that you sort of really liked the blue-collar ones. Like, like the players that, really are putting for the jumper. You know, you mentioned Ferrito and a number of others that, got the best out of themselves. And, yeah, I mean, they're always favourite players of ours as well. And, even Drew Petrie. Yeah, I remember going to a game, I think it might have been Archer's 300th, where he kicked six goals or something against
in
Brian.
A quarter.
Yeah, in a quarter, yeah. That's a lot of good players. So you fancied more the blue collar ones rather than players like maybe a Jared Polak.
Yes, absolutely. I think, like I mentioned, players like Jared Waite and Thomas that, just didn't know what you were going to get. I think I love the element of surprise as well, oddly enough. I mean, obviously, we all like consistency, but it was nice some days to just rock up and go, all right, he's on today. Let's see what happens here. And then by the time you get to the end of the game, they've won the game for you. I love that sort of stuff. But I agree with you, Dean. There's something about a blue-collar player that just really tugs at the heartstrings. I think players that may not come into the system with all the ability in the world, but just work to get the best out of themselves. I feel like that's our club. I mean, we work to get the best out of ourselves. The shin bone and spirit values and just the whole history of our club. We've always fought for what we've got and we make the most of what we have. And when I see that in a player, I think straight away, yep, you're a North Melbourne person.
Definitely. Yeah, Jared, right? Yeah, no. I felt he actually got more consistency when he went to North in the Carlton. He was very up in the Carlton.
Absolutely.
Whereas North, and he was important in our finals wins in a couple of them. And, he certainly had some big games. And, he was very well-liked by the North supporters as well. So what about current-day favourite player or players?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I had a big think about this. I just love Nick Larkey. I think I've mentioned it on the podcast. I think he has captain written all over him. And I think also because I look at Nick Larkey and see like a Drew Petrie as well, I just think he is an awesome guy. And I think loyalty is a big thing for me as well with a player. And the fact that Nick Larkey signed that big deal last year and just thought, all right, I'm going to stick by the club that gave me an opportunity at pick 73. And he's another one. He's just got the best out of himself. May not have come in with that high draft pick tag, but worked and had that first game where we all remember that, just donuts on the stat sheet, but just worked. And now he's become one of the best forwards in the competition in a team that last year won three games. So, I mean, you can't say much more. He's a worker. He tries hard. He bleeds for the jumper and he's bloody good at what he does too. I think he is such a good speaker and good player and quality person, quality player, Nick Clarke. I can't really say much more. He's probably right now that my favourite player that we have on the list. But in saying that, I mean, how can you go past LGU as well? Another one that I think really has faith in the club and where we're going through the really hard times. Wardlaw and Sheasel of late, of course, they bring a smile to your face. And I'm still high on Cullen Coleman-Jones. I really think he can do anything for us too. I'm sticking with that. But yeah, probably in terms of a favourite player of the modern day, Nick Larkey, just because, yeah, pick 73 and has worked so hard to get where he is now. And I still think he'll be captain of the club one day.
Yeah, it's not a bad shout. I mean, he speaks really well when he's in the media as well. He speaks highly of the club. He's always got a positive attitude, no matter how bad the club's going, you know, whether it was David Noble or even this year when we're getting smashed, particularly early in the season. Yeah, he gives you hope. Yeah, he gave hope to supporters. And, yeah, it was good to see him get reward for all his effort in the last round last year, where I think he kicked 9, didn't he, against Gold Coast. So, I mean, if he was actually at a half-decent team, he probably would have won a couple more Coleman medals. So, yeah. And it's nothing wrong with sticking with those players that you have faith in, but like a Cullen Coleman-Jones that, after a few weeks, you sort of think, oh, maybe I shouldn't have been so high on him or something like that. But you might as well stick fat now. Hopefully he puts in a big pre-season. Yeah.
And just on LDU, I mean, I really feel like he can be anything in the latter part of the next few seasons. Like he screams best midfielder in the comp if he can just string games together and we can start playing a little bit better as a team. I really feel like the ceiling is so high for that boy. So I'm keen to see how this year goes. And by all reports in the preseason, he shaved 15 seconds off his time trial and has come back in ripping nick. So if his body can hold up and we can start maybe helping him out a little bit more, I feel like, yeah, there's just best player in the comp written all over him. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it was the first few rounds last season where he started off on fire, didn't he? We were one of the first two. And then I think he got a calf injury after he missed a game. And then he had another injury after that. So he just couldn't get continuity. But you could sort of sense, I know it was only a small sample size, the first two or three rounds, that there's a body of work there where he could rip a game apart if he gets, continuity. And obviously, gets a little bit more help, like you said, in the midfield, not just relying on him. But it sounds like, with Wardlaw, Simpkin and a number of others, that he should be able to get that. But, there's a lot to like about him. And if he gets, if he gets 20-plus games this season, then look out. He'll probably be one of the best midfielders in the comp. There's no doubt about that. Best player you've ever seen it for North?
Ooh. You can't go past Boomer Harvey, can you? Dusty's longevity, professionalism, excitement, all of the above. I mean, I kind of joined the picture fairly late in the piece with Boomer, obviously, but even he could have continued on. I mean, that's a conversation for another day, but he actually could have. He could still be playing now, to be fair. Just the sheer brilliance of the guy too. And once again, I think there's a particular theme running through this podcast, but there were so many knocks on him. Later draft pick, too small, too slow, whatever else was labelled on him, and he just worked hard and he got the absolute best out of himself and became a North Melbourne legend. And I just think, people go to the footy to watch Boomer. They did. A lot of supporters I'd speak to would just say, well, I'm here really just for the Boomer show. So, what a great human being and what a great North Melbourne person. So, yeah, probably Boomer.
Yeah, no, that's a really good one. It was interesting when he was first drafted, when I was reading his autobiography, which is a number of years ago, that the recruiting guy wanted him, but Dennis Pagan was firm that he didn't want him. And they had a big argument. And people were looking around in the draft room because they could actually hear the argument, because Dennis Pagan was saying, no, I don't want this kid. He's too small. He's a jockey and all that sort of thing. And, geez, it turned out pretty well 430 games later.
I think Neil Stubar's probably having a good laugh now, isn't he? He probably texts Dennis Pagan every night and says, how did that one turn out for you?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So he missed out on a few, Neville Stubar, but he certainly got that one right. So I enjoy asking this question for some reason, but any players that you didn't like or rate?
Yeah, I had a good think about it. I mean, we don't talk about the name Jason Horne Francis of recent times, but certainly that disaster left a sour taste in everyone's mouth. And I think from the moment he walked into the club, I remember just having a bad feeling and halfway through the year putting out a few tweets that caused a few of our supporters to get pretty rolled up. Saying, you know, you're being a bit harsh, this and that, but I've turned out to be correct, unfortunately. So I think that situation, especially because he was a pick number one, disturbed a lot of us. So that's a fairly obvious one. And you mentioned him before. I think the Jared Polek disaster didn't go very well for our club. I think just from the moment he walked into the door, I mean, with respect to him, but I think he knew what his paycheck was going to be, and I don't think he ever bought into the culture of the club. Again, the theme of this podcast is, I think, once you're a North Melbourne person, if you don't want to be a North Melbourne person, ship off. And I don't ever think he ever bought into being a North Melbourne person necessarily. This is a really hard question. I feel like there were, do you remember Kieran Harper?
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
So I always thought he had quite a lot of potential as a player on the list and was delisted maybe prematurely. So it's not really a question of a player that I didn't rate. It's probably a player that I rated but really kind of let me down. I felt like he was someone that really could have turned into anything but just never maybe worked hard enough to get to where his level of talent was. And then unfortunately it was cut from the list. That's one that I kind of had a good think about. I haven't thought about him in years, but he's probably one of those. And I still think this is probably going to get some backlash. And this isn't about a player that I don't rate, but I still hope to see more from Luke McDonald as our captain of the footy club. He is someone that buys into the culture, buys into the club, is a shin boner. But I just want to see him get the absolute best of himself for the club's sake in the period we're going through now. And I hope in a couple of years' time I say to you and say to all the other North fans, gee, I was happy to have Luke McDonald as captain throughout the really hard times of our footy club. Because I just think as a pick seven, he hasn't quite got to the level I think all of us were hoping for in regards to his output on the field.
Yeah, shout out to Shardy. He's probably going to message you 5 minutes after this podcast is finished and sort of tell you what you think. I don't know if he should be – like, I think I've mentioned this to you off-air before, and I'll mention it on air. I don't know if he's a great leader, to be honest with you. I think, you know, I mean, there's a couple instances. He seems to panic when the game's tight or anything like that. He seems to, you know, fumble or, you know, try and hoof the ball. There was that game, I think it was Essendon, where he was crying after the game. And from a leader, you want someone that's strong. And yeah. Maybe I'm reading too much in it, but, you know, he should have been consoling Griffin Lowe, who should have been crying, not the opposite way around. And that's what I sort of look for in a leader. And he sort of, like I mentioned, he sort of panics when the pressure is cooking a little bit. Not that it's... Yeah, not that I don't rate him as a player or anything like that. I just feel like, it'd probably be better if he wasn't a leader. And I guess I've asked you this before, but should players be voting who the captain is? I don't think that's a great idea, or in the leadership group. I think it should be coaches that vote on who should be in the leadership group. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, like I said just before, I'm not questioning his commitment to the club, love for the club, or his effort, nothing like that. I really feel like Luke McDonald is a shin boner, but there's just elements of his game where I feel like sometimes he just lets himself down, and I'm really hoping that that narrative can change this year because we need him, especially as a player in the back line where we're probably strapped a lot for talent that he can be the guy that can lead us out of the troubled waters. In regards to his leadership, I think there has to be a reason, Dean, why he is captain. And he has the type of personality that I feel like a lot of people are drawn to. He seems to be very inclusive and warm and gets around people and really brings people together. But in terms of whether or not it's a player or a coach-driven thing, I think I'm probably with you. I would probably feel more comfortable with the coach picking the captain than the players, just because there are sometimes some personal conflicts of interest, whether or not you were really close friends with someone and you thought, I can't really vote against him, but maybe there's someone else in the team that shows more potential for a leadership role or a real kind of on-field driver or whatever it might be. But there's always silent leaders as well. I mean, I was always surprised that Todd Goldstein was never in the leadership group for our footy club for the time that he was there, because I always thought that he was a great leader of the club. But some people are just silent leaders, and I think Luke McDonald's more of like an outward leader in terms of his voice and camaraderie, more so than maybe leading by example a lot of the time. And maybe that's Jai's role. Jai's more the leader on the field, and Luke's more the captain that brings people together off the field.
Yeah. No, I think you summed up really well there, and I agree with a lot of your points about that. So, yeah, I think as far as I know, they'll be in a leadership group next season. Yeah, with Todd Goldstein, he probably is a player that led with his actions rather than probably with his words and so forth. So it worked for him. Maybe he never wanted to be in a leadership group. I'm not too sure. So, yeah, but he's at Essendon now, so who cares? What are you hoping to see in 2024 now?
Ooh, I love that question, because I think it already feels like a long off season for the men's program. There are sort of key indicators for me, and I think maybe I share the sentiments of a lot of other North supporters, in that we just want to see growth. So I think growth in the team as a whole, in the way that they play as a unit, and growth in the kids. So I want to see development. I want to see LDU take the next step. I want to see Will Phillips take the next step. I want to see our top-end draft picks and our bottom-end draft picks improve and see growth within them as individual players, and also for a game plan that looks good. So I want to see that kind of next step, next layer of the onion from what we saw this year in regards to how we move the ball, how we transition, how we defend, how we score. I want us to be an exciting team, and I'm hoping that doesn't mean that we're going to get scored heavily, but we'll also score. I want to kind of see a good balance between those two things. I want to see some of our new draftees play footy. That will be a really exciting thing to see. And even necessarily, if they're not exactly setting the world on fire straight away, watching them get better over the course of the year. I think the big thing for me isn't necessarily wins, but I want to see no more real drubbings like we saw this year at times. I think the only way to really improve and go from winning 3 games to winning 6 or 7 is by bridging that gap between losing by 10 goals and maybe losing by a couple of goals or a few points, whatever it might be. I really just hope that there's no more 100-point losses against the top teams or whoever it might be. I think that's what I ask. I'm obviously hoping for more wins, but I don't want to walk away from a game feeling hopeless and feeling like there's no sort of way out because no one really performed on the day, or so-and-so is going backwards, or we're not seeing enough from this player. I just want steady growth over the course of the year.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to be, you know, round 4 or 5 in next season already thinking about the draft and when that's happening and, looking at top prospects and so forth. And, I mean, I guess a good sample size, and it's only a small sample size, was that round 23 game against Gold Coast where we... we looked super attacking, didn't we? We tried to play a little bit like Collingwood, a bit of a run and gun. Obviously, you know, I mean, it's a different level there between us and Collingwood. But, you know, we're trying to kick scores and, you know, trying to be proactive with their football. And hopefully that's a sign that we can do that in 2024. I guess that's what you're pretty much saying.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we've got... I should have mentioned that I won a whole season from Clarko, and I've got no doubt that will happen. But just consistency for the footy club, I think there's just been so many disruptions and new faces. And I just want a consistent year where we've got the same crew together. That'll be awesome. And that was probably what's going to lead to what you're saying, Dean, which is a consistent game plan and a good brand of footy. Because you got the one voice driving home the standards and the skills and the game plan and the way we want to play, that's just going to evolve because you've got the same consistent messaging. And I also hope for an injury-free year of some sort, because you're not going to get that if there's, LDU's out 1 week and then you've got whoever it might be back in the next week. I want to see a consistent 22 at times. So that'll be important for our growth long-term.
Yeah, 100%. I guess the concern is if Nick Larkey went down injured, we're pretty much screwed. I don't know where the goals are going to come from. So we're kind of relying a lot on him staying healthy next season. So hopefully, touch wood or whatever is near you, basically that he can stay healthy again, because he hasn't really had any injuries in the last few years. So, yeah, he's probably going to be just as important as anyone staying fit and healthy. I forgot to ask you this question before, but what's your favourite game of all time?
Oh, this one I gave a lot of thought to, because it's probably between the two. I don't think I can separate them, so I'm going to have to say both of them, Dean. Sorry to be a bit of a fence sitter. But I would probably say the 2015 final against Richmond, the elimination final. We came into that game as underdogs, and that was just awesome. The atmosphere that day, having 90,000 people at the G, I wasn't sure which way it was going to go. There was obviously a lot of pressure on Richmond. They were touted the better team, but we just came away with the chocolates. And I've mentioned Drew Petrie a couple of times, but he sort of changed the momentum and put us back in front at the end of that third quarter. And the elation I felt, and Thomas running into that open goal in the last quarter, and Jared Waite had his moments, and there's just Ben Jacobs on Trent Cotchin. There's just so many moments and things that happened in that game that stay with me forever, and I'll never forget the feeling on that final siren that day. Pure elation. That was pretty cool. And then, of course, the 2014 elimination final against Essendon. The infamous Sam Wright intercept mark, and Drew Petrie's heroics at the end of the game, and Daniel Wells's magic, and just so many moments in that game that the comeback, there's just and the Bombers beating the Bombers, and their streaks continued, and we've gone from a bit of strength to a down period, but they still haven't won a final, and it's just so many awesome moments that were part of those two games, and moments that will go down in our club's folklore. And pretty cool. Winning finals and being part of finals are just so cool, and I can't wait to get back there one day and hopefully go even further than that group did a few years ago.
Yeah, no, I definitely hope it's sooner rather than later. In saying that, when do you think we can compete for another flag?
Ooh, this might be an unpopular opinion, and I hope I'm wrong, but I feel like our time's probably 2027, 2028 and beyond. I mean, I'm hoping for finals 27, and I'm hoping that we're seriously competing for a flag from that point onwards. I'm hoping it's sooner, but the way that I've sort of framed that is just the teams that are around us and where they're trajecting. You just feel like the Gold Coast are coming up, and they're probably going to have a little period of success, and I think the teams at the top of the ladder aren't really going anywhere anytime soon. So I'm hoping 27, we're talking about finals really seriously. And then from that point on, we're looking at a flag.
Yeah, I mean, I think the people I've had on previously, like Marnie, Josh Neal, and even Jesse, have pretty much said the similar sort of timeline, 2027, 2028, 2029 sort of thing. That's when we can sort of really seriously compete for another flag. Hopefully by 2026, we're really pushing for a finals berth. And like you said, you made a very good point. There's a lot of teams that are coming up as well in that period that are going to be – that are ahead of us at the moment. You're probably even looking at Hawthorn Probably ahead of us at the moment, and a number of other clubs. So, yeah, I mean, I guess we've just got to be a bit more patient for a bit longer, don't we?
For sure. And, like, not to be a Debbie Downer because it's not probably the time for it, but with Tasmania entering the competition as well in a few years' time, I just hope that we get this right, because if we don't get it right with the compromised drafts coming up, I fear for what it looks like. But in saying that, I'm not thinking that, but it's more the teams around us are going to start pushing, and we've got to start pushing with them in the next 3-4 years, probably more realistically four or more for a premiership. And, of course, Clarkson's 1 year down on that 5-year deal, so hopefully by the end of that contract we're really starting to look at a period of success, and we can thank him for it.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I think you mentioned this earlier, like 12 months ago, you know, he was going through all the investigation and so forth. So it was obviously affecting him, and it did affect him halfway, you know, through the season where he had to take a break. So hopefully no distractions now, and he can just focus fully on the pre-season and, you know, then go into the season with a certain standards and game plans and so forth. And obviously got a, you know, his coaching group in as well. So as opposed to the previous regime where they had their own, you know, assistant coaches sort of stayed along. So he's got his own assistant coaches in now. So things are looking up. Well, Siobhan, that's all I've got for you as far as questions. Any final messages for all your loyal disciples out there?
Ah, thanks, Dean. That's very kind. I think it's just, it's a real special thing to be a North Melbourne supporter, and obviously I've had a lick of the ice cream in a different camp as well, and it's just a special fan base, it really is, and I'm really honoured to be part of it, and I'm also really blessed to have a platform where I can talk about the club. And we've gone through a period of real dark times, and that's been hard to show up and talk about at times, but when the good times come around, I can only just imagine how we're all going to be feeling. And I couldn't imagine a more awesome group of players and people to share that with once it happens. And yeah, I just feel like I've mentioned it earlier, like it's a really special place. And no matter what, I mean, we've survived a lot as a footy club. I wasn't necessarily around for the relocation talk and the real possibility that we weren't going to be North Melbourne. And yeah, for us to survive that, I feel like we can survive anything. So, thank you to everyone who listens to the podcast and who messages me on Twitter, good, bad, or indifferent. Like, it's just an awesome, awesome fan base and club. And, yeah, I'm just – it brings me so much joy and anger and sadness and all of the above, but I wouldn't have it any other way. And without North Melbourne, like, I wouldn't have met you, Dean, and so many other people that are kind of part of my life. So – yeah, North are just a special place, and yeah, I'm very blessed to be a fan of this great, not just a football club, like it's a religion for people, and just an awesome place.
Yeah, no, really well summed up. And like you said, it's about the relationships you've built with people just going to the game, you know, sitting with your normal sort of set of supporters that Eddie had and so forth, and just catching up with them weekly. And obviously you've got a, you know, special relationship with your dad where you go to the footy as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's just little things. I remember talking to Marnie when I first, I think, started talking to her, and she sort of said, you know, when she moved to Perth, how down she got by not going to the footy, and how much joy she got when she moved back to Melbourne and just going to the family with her, you know, going to the footy with her family, and how much joy that's brought to her. So, yeah, no, well, it's been a real pleasure getting to know you and your football journey, Siobhan. I'm glad you went to the, you know, I was going to say the dark side, but to the blue and white side as opposed to the dark navy blue side. I really appreciate you for doing that. And yeah, obviously enjoy the rest of your year, and I'm sure I'll chat to you next year when pre-season really starts getting going.
Absolutely. No, thank you, Dean. You do such a wonderful job with this podcast, and I'm super lucky to be a very small part in a really great production that you put together for the supporters, and I think everyone appreciates the content that you create, and you sort of further solidify that relationship we all have with the club by giving me and the select other few that are very lucky to be able to come on and talk about the club. The more we talk about the club, the stronger it's going to get, I guess. So thank you for producing the content that you do.
No, I really appreciate that, those nice words, Siobhan. And I'm only as good as the guests I have on, so like yourself. So, yeah, I can only be humble like that. So, yeah, no, I really appreciate you coming on, Siobhan. And, yeah, enjoy the rest of your year. So, yeah, I know you've got a very busy period coming up with work and so forth. So, yeah, no, don't I'm sure Christmas will be a good time. And, yeah, I'm sure you enjoy January when you get a bit of time off as well.
Absolutely. Happy New Year and Merry Christmas to all, I guess.
So thank you very much to Siobhan Rowe for coming on once again. It was a pleasure getting to know her and hearing her stories as well and her favourite games and so forth. So, yeah, make sure to give her a follow at Siobhan _ Rowe on X, Instagram, I'm pretty sure, if you can just type her name. And, yeah, send her a message telling her how much you appreciate getting to hear her story on how she became a North supporter. That's it for tonight. So I will be back next week. I'm not too sure what I'm going to do yet. It really is getting into the off season now of everything. I'll probably go to doing one episode a week from here on after that until probably the new year. So, yeah, just wind down a little bit. There's not really too much to talk about. I'll probably do another get to know you episode next week. So look out for that. Anyways, enjoy the rest of your week. And tonight I will leave a shout out to Siobhan_ Rowe on X. Bye for now and go Roos.